Hello and welcome everybody out there. This is Nicholas and Kuhn, and this is of course Mead and Moonlight, the Pagan Folk podcast, back with another episode this week. And yeah, this week we're taking it kind of light. We just want to hit you with some nice movie recommendations. This is actually a topic that Kuhn came up with. So Kuhn, maybe you want to elaborate a bit on what your thought process was behind this sort of little episode.
Yes, I could certainly do that. But first of all, hello people. And yes, we were actually planning on maybe getting the first guest on here, but there is now also holiday vacation and busy other stuff. You'll get that when things have quieted down and gone back to normal. Yes, movies. Why movies? I think movies are like music, sort of like a universal language that people speak. And there's definitely movies that give a good representation of maybe pagan, tribal, historical pictures or legends of fairies brought to life. Disney princesses being the first fairy legends that children get into contact with. Great books that are given a face outside of everybody's beautiful imagination, of course. For me personally, and I do know of quite some, that we're not the only ones out there. There's quite some bands that take their inspiration from movies, or the other way around, where bands are asked to create the perfect soundtrack to mythical images and such. So yeah, universal language, and it would of course be awesome if through this podcast you would get to know movies that you didn't know you loved. And perhaps even after this episode, you can share some of your favorite fairy, pagan, mythic movies with us.
Yeah, and I'm pretty excited for that topic as well, because, I mean, when you go to concerts or festivals where pagan folk bands play, it's very obvious that there is like a huge visual inspiration going on. And I think a lot of that might come from movies or from certain shows, especially in recent years. So I'm pretty excited to see where this is going and what kind of inspiration, yeah, you know, where that comes from. And so do you want to start with your like first influential movie or your first recommendation for people to watch?
Sure. By the way, we also have to do a book episode after this, because I know that Omnia was actually written into an amazing book. But that is for another time. Okay, so which one am I starting with? I'm going to go with one pretty personal. It's a very child-friendly movie, and it's called The Spiderwick Chronicles. And that really brushes on the fairy subject. It's based on the book with the same title. And it's basically just a normal world where there are also visual fairies living in houses, like the brownies and whatnot. And it's basically about a crazy uncle, or well, he's perceived as crazy by the normal people. And he was busy writing a field guide on fairies that he's been researching his entire life. And as he was sort of delving into this, finding out more about good fairies, bad fairies, evil ogres and whatnot, he actually got to go to a fairy garden. And of course, time goes very differently there. So for him, it seems like he's only been there for a very short while time has been raging on in the real world. And his I think it's his grandchildren, actually, that find or move into his old house. And they also already notice that there is like a mushroom circle, and it's crazy. And they meet a fairy in the house, and they sort of get swept up into this whole fairy adventure. They meet a hobgoblin that spits in their eyes and gives them the sight. It's actually something that we based up a song with Seed, a hobgoblin's gift. So there you go. It's already a direct influence. It's a very family-friendly fairy movie with the darker sides and as well as the more beautiful sides of the fairies. And I think that is what makes it really, really great. And of course, all the badass Vikings out there are going to be watching. They're like, nope. I also have more mature movies, but this one, if you haven't seen it and you like fairies, definitely check it out.
Yeah, I remember watching that one as well, but I think I watched it quite a couple of years after it was originally released, and you know, probably at that point I was one of those people who thought like, oh wait, I am too old for that. But my girlfriend Nina, I think she has like a book that was made after the movie where it's a lot of like concept art, and yeah, you know, basically I think it's made after that sort of like that field guide that the grandfather was writing.
Yep.
And that's actually quite enjoyable, because I love nothing more than sort of these books, or you know, I like it when in the story, you know, it can either be a movie or a book or whatever, there is someone who's like sort of writing about sort of that supernatural stuff and trying to make sense of it and stuff like that. There is a book that I own by Brian Froud, and I don't know what other, I think there's like another author also in there. And it's also basically also that, where they're talking about, you know, all these fairies and goblins and a whole bunch of other fake creatures, and just writing, you know, you can find them in that place, and you know, they only show themselves at that particular time of the night or of the day, and be careful because they do that. And then I think that's so that's a really nice thing, because it tells a good story, but it also sort of builds this rich tapestry and makes it makes it somehow a lot more believable, you know.
It's actually like a sort of like a biology book, the way they present it. I also have the Field Guide to Goblins by Brian Froud, and even my brother gave me a little handmade leather bound book where I am recording my own sightings and feelings and with drawings and little stuff. So that is really cool. And it's of course interesting, all these creatures have a deep root in old legends, fairy tales all over the world. I mean, they have different shapes, different names, but all these crazy stuff that would happen in and around the house, or bad stuff that happens, accursed sites. It's all very, very rooted, and there's so much that can be found. So it's for me, it's not. It would not be strange if there is I'm convinced there is truth to the stories. Maybe not depicted as Spiderwick Chronicles, where your house can actually be attacked by a big ogre if your mushroom circle is broken. There's definitely tales about, if you don't have the proper protection, bad things will happen. And stories, changeling childs, where fairies abduct your child and replace it with a fairy child. So if in old times you had a weird kid that wasn't really adding up, that must not be your kid. It must have been a changeling child, and your kid was somewhere in the fairy gardens abducted, and you had to make do with what you had gotten in return because you might have pissed off the wrong creatures.
Yeah. I remember there is in that Brian Froud. I mean, we're talking a whole lot about books now, but I just wanted to,
yeah.
There is in that Brian Froud book that I have. There is this like trick how, you know, in a way where how you can identify a changeling, which is apparently if you like boil water in an empty eggshell, then the changeling child will turn to you and say with like a weirdly old sounding voice, it'll say, I saw the egg before the hen and the hen before the egg, but never ever did I see someone boiling water in an eggshell or something like that. And that's how you know that they are a changeling and not an actual human child.
Yeah, guys, so try it out and let us know how it went. Yeah. Especially if you're like a kindergarten teacher. Come on, go. It's a fun Friday afternoon project. Maybe you have old and wise changeling fairies in your class.
And that's how you get fired from your job.
probably. Oh, well, you can... We will not be liable. Just putting it out there.
That's probably very, very, very smart, Kuhn. So can I... I'm also gonna name a movie now, if that's cool with you.
Yes, is it Thor Ragnarok?
Of course, that's like how my true Norse feelings came to light was...
That's why I found it as well. Those, yeah, it's like great.
Yeah, it's just hot blonde dudes, right?
Yep.
That's what we are.
Yep.
No. All right. My pick is actually an animated movie, and from the I don't even know. I think it's from the 90s, and it's called Princess Mononoke, or Mononoke Hime, I think is the original Japanese title. And of course, that's the that's a movie by the very good animation studio Studio Ghibli, or Ghibli, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Japanese. And I feel very drawn to that movie because it deals a lot with, you know, the sort of interactions between humans and the natural world, and, you know, the effects they have on each other. And it's also very tragic, and sort of like it has a very melancholic feel to it, and it has like quite a grand scope. You know, there's quite the, you know, big things happening. I don't think I want to spoil the movie for people who haven't seen it. I mean, most people probably have, but if not, it's a very it's a good movie, but don't, you know, if you're in a bad mood, it's probably not the right movie to watch because it's very heavy. But that's one I really, really like. And even though it's probably not too applicable, you know, a lot of the mythological stuff in it is, that's the thing, I think. It's actually not really pertains to any real mythology. It just takes elements from probably like Shintoism and other animism sort of that's around, and sort of puts it into, I think I read somewhere that there's like influences from like sort of Indonesian myth in there that the main guy behind the studio sort of really liked and stuff like that. So it's not really something, you know, like an authentic myth or like an, you know, but it has a lot of elements that you can find in, I think, in myths and stories from around the world. And that's one I really like. Have you ever watched that one?
I think I have been on the point of watching it 50 times. And I think what you said, that it sort of, when you look up the trailer or something, it feels heavy. So for me, always in Holland we say the drempel is a bit high to start watching it. The threshold so I don't think I have any excuses anymore. I just have to find where I can watch it.
I think it might be on Netflix, actually. Oh. At least in Germany it is.
Oh, cool. And I'll definitely do that. But yeah, like you said, that might be like less familiar stuff, especially maybe to Western European comparison, Snow White stuff. But I think that's what's great about those like movies with fantasy themes, is that people like the director as an artist can create that a different language that you do sort of understand and broadens your horizon, and I really like that in movies.
Yeah, and the soundtrack is also very good. I think recently I read somewhere that now all the Studio Ghibli soundtracks are available for streaming now, which they weren't for a long time. So if you want to check that out, it's a very beautifully made music. So it's overall just a very pleasurable experience, even though the topics might be a bit heavy sometimes, but please don't feel discouraged by that. It's very good. I'm awaiting your report next week, Kuhn. Because
okay, yeah. You have to hold me to it, but music's so important as well. So yeah, I'm gonna check it out. But if I actually come back depressed and crying, it's on you, man.
I'll build you up again. That's what I'm here for, cool. Buddy. Like it's really cool. I just want to like step in real quick. It's really cool when I you know, Kuhn said earlier that we originally had planned to have a guest for this episode, which didn't work out because of scheduling issues. And I was pretty busy all week, and I couldn't really come up with a topic for what we could talk about instead. But then Kuhn said, well, we talked about talking about like sort of movies that feel like they could be interesting, like, you know, for pagan folk listeners, or, you know, that fit. And I sort of went into the episode like, okay, Kuhn has it all figured out. I'm just going to sit back and then just react to what he's saying. But now that we're talking, I'm actually like, my mind is like rotating. I'm thinking of all the movies that I think have at least shaped me, you know, in that way, that feel like they have a pagan atmosphere. So I'm very excited to where this conversation will lead us.
Yeah.
So, I guess, thank you for being such a stimulating conversation partner again.
No problem. I'm looking at the list that I prepared, and I'm like, oh, geez, man. This could have maybe been made by a 6-year-old person that really just likes fairies, and there's nothing really deep and pagan about it. But that does not deter me from presenting them, because I'm proud of it. I was thinking, am I going to go towards the deeper, darker? No, I'm just going to stick with the feel-good stuff right now. Okay, so I have some movies that are all done, yes, by Disney, I'm very sorry. But and I'm just going to name three and then just weave the theme that they all have in there. Yeah. So then some movies that really literally made me cry because they were very pretty, and let's be honest, Disney does music pretty well. We have Brave with Merda in Scotland, where her mother turns into a bear, and there's a curse, and there's wisps, and there's epic music, and there are weird triplets, and okay, so I'm not gonna spoil, but and it has the dark side and light side of fairies. I love that where like the ancient secrets of the land come to life. Moana, yes. Also, especially some scenes where a lost grandmother returns in the form of a big manta ray, and there is this heritage of the ancestors resonating. It's just great how they basically turn a princess movie into something deeper, and that it's also very interesting if you look for something more. And I think the same goes for, and I can't probably list a whole more, Brother Bear is also one of these pretty merciless movies, whereas there's a real lesson that can be taken from it. You can look at it as just an animated movie, huzzah, la la la, but you can also look for the deeper meaning and take from it what you will. And they're all tragic in their own way, and in all of them, nature is seen as this sort of sacred, all-powerful power that you have to live together with. You can't just oppose it. You can, but you won't win. There is no winning. You can't win from nature. There's no use to win from nature. The only thing that can bring you a happy life is to eventually, through lessons hard learned, maybe live in harmony and love with everything that surrounds you. And I think...
And if that isn't pagan folk, then what is?
Yeah. So, yeah, I like me some Disney fantasy-themed themed movies. It's also very nostalgic, of course.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not, of course, you know, when we talk about our influences and what, you know, what sort of took you or took us into the direction of pagan folk, of course, the foundations for that will be, you know, in our childhood, I guess, you know, where else should that sort of come from? I also really like all of those movies. I think it's been a while since I've watched the Brother Bear one, but I that was quite sad. I mean, Disney movies are,
yes,
like a lot of them are. I don't know. It's I guess it's good to show the whole scope of like human emotion, you know. So, but yeah, this is quite tough sometimes. Yeah. All right. So, my next choice, or like what I would like to talk about next, is a movie that I still think is awesome, and it's sort of it's part of that series of movies in like the around like 2005. To maybe like 2010, there was a series, like a couple of movies that were like gritty and realistic reinterpretations of historical figures and myths. And the one that I really like out of that was King Arthur, with Clive Owen, Keira Knightley, Mads Mikkelsen.
And where he is the Roman centurion.
Yes. Basically, the idea is that in the times of Roman occupation of Britain, that, you know, the time with where the like Hadrian's Wall was necessary and stuff like that, there was a couple of like I think it's like Scythian warriors, you know, from like I think they're from the Balkans or maybe even more like south of that. And they're like famously good, like rider, like horse riders and like combatants of their horse or whatever. And like at every time, you know, at every point of time in there is like a legion or like a group of those that are like protecting the Roman settlements in Britain. And like King Arthur is not one of, you know, those people, but he's like a Briton who was taken to Rome very early on in his life, and then so he thinks of himself as a Roman, and you know it's King, it's not, it's like more like an origin story of King Arthur probably, and then the idea is like his famous knights of the Round Table are these like warriors that he leads into battle, and the very pagan folk thing about that movie is not necessarily the good guys, the like King Arthur and his knights, but rather their opponents, the Picts, because they go out with like being clad in leather and having like ornaments on their skin and looking, you know, very Celtic, very Pictish. And I remember that having a very big impact on me, how these, you know, people sort of like hid in the forest and were these primal tribal warriors who, you know, seem to be very in tune with you know, with their natural surroundings. And I think in that version of the story, Merlin is like sort of like a druid or a shaman even, and I think that is, I even like, that is one of the very few movies that I own on DVD, because I rewatched it a lot, and I think earlier this year we rewatched it together with with our new hurdy-gurdy player, and after a couple, that was the first time that I had watched it after a couple of years, and I was like, yeah, this is all very cheesy and, you know, just straight like popcorn cinema, as we say in German, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, and I think this movie, I think a lot of people in the audience will have watched this movie and liked a certain bit of it. Especially is where they're in the tavern and she starts singing that land,
yes,
of,
oh,
barren land of eagle. That one. I think it's even being played sometimes by bands on festivals in the folk scene. And I know we've definitely had requests if we could play it. I think it's actually one of the first songs that we rehearsed. We never played it, but that was like 7 years ago. And we're still with me and Esme and Lars. But I think that mood, that whole grim, historic, spiritual mood, it's in there. Like, yeah, it's definitely a cheesy movie, and historically, it's The Legend of King Arthur. I mean, I also always have trouble when people are like, oh, it's not real, it was buried there, and it's all there, it's not make sense. I know, okay, but, yeah. Yeah, I can definitely enjoy this for what it is. I can feel you.
I think it is, because it's not, you know, it's not shining knights and armor, and it doesn't feel, you know, a lot of medieval depiction of, you know, of medieval Europe is obviously, you know, a lot of it is very like squeaky clean and like Christian and stuff like that. But that movie sort of has a very, like, it has a lot of archaic, I don't know, it feels very archaic, and everything feels sort of, it feels mythical, but it doesn't, you know, sometimes with, like, myths and legends, the characters act in a very unhuman way, you know, because, of course, you know, when you have stuff like the Poetic Edda or whatever, you know, the poems in it are very, like, it's old, it's very old poetry, so it's not written in a way that it's very easy to relate to, at least to me. So something like King Arthur, that is very historically inaccurate probably, and like yada yada yada, but because the people in it act in a way that I can relate to, because it's, you know, obviously it's a modern movie, but it still has this historic archaic feel to it, and that's makes it way more, you know, relatable, and you can feel with the characters rather than like when you read an actual, you know, piece of history. At least that's how it always is to me.
Yeah. I can see that there's definitely some flaws in there, some, like, geez, why are you doing this? Okay, yeah, because I'm freaking human. Jeez, nobody's perfect. Okay, I'm going to have to rewatch that as well. I know what I'll be doing this week. And actually from this movie, I can make a good bridge to the more mature movie in my list. I don't know if you've watched it. Mists of Avalon.
I have not, actually.
Oh, okay. So it's actually also with King Arthur. But the main focus is on the realm, the island of Avalon, which is concealed by mists for nobody else, for everybody but druids and priestesses. And it focuses on the Beltane feast, it focuses on hunting, like the Wild Hunt. There's great music with Lorena McKennett in it. It's It's pretty old by now, I think. I think it was pretty old when I watched it, so it might be tough to get through if you're looking for the Hollywood factor. But I think the atmosphere and the grimness, they sort of there's a theme to me to what I like is that this old religion, basically Christianity, is sort of rising. The old religion is sort of dying, and that's a problem. But the old religion is also very unforgiving, and that's very interesting. It's very well done, that movie. I think my review was very all over the place, but I don't want to spoil anything. But it's definitely worth a watch, even just for the how they depicted the pagan rituals. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's made after a quite famous novel, right? Yeah, because I think we have that book in our bookshelf here, but I'm aware of it, and I know that it's very influential also, like for this sort of like a little bit of new age spiritualism and stuff like that. At least the book is. I think you find that referenced quite often. Also the aesthetics.
Yeah, it's from the perspective of the female characters, which is makes it different.
Yeah. So I guess I'll have to check that out myself eventually as well, because you know I am intrigued. I'm really a fan of like the King Arthur myth in general. That's probably like one of my favorite sort of like myths, if you can even call it one myth. Yeah, and I don't know. I'm super intrigued by that, and I've read a lot of versions of that story, you know, and I think it's pretty neat.
It is.
Even though there's not...
What?
No, even I was just thinking, even though it's not like a lot, like there is a lot of like mythological figures, or it's not very pagan folk, you know, it's very much like knights and chivalry and like the... I don't know, like fair maidens and stuff like that. It's but I don't know. I'm like a big fan of like when you go and like look at movies or stories and modern depictions of things. I think it's always interesting like to look back and it's like, I wonder what the origin of that is. And that's like a thing with King Arthur where I wonder like, ooh, I wonder when that story actually was told for the first time and what's like the historic base for it, or you know, whatever you want to call it. I think that's pretty interesting. So yeah.
Well, I do think that's why I really like this Mists of Avalon depiction, because it's not all fair maidens and stuff. It's really druids and the old religion being what it is, and that's why it really resonated with me. And well, the music is very very well done. Yep, I like it.
Nice. All right, so I'm gonna go for my next recommendation. I don't know if it's a well-known movie. I think it's certainly kind of artsy, but like with how famous like Viking stuff is these days, maybe it had like a bit of a resurgence. I don't know. But that movie is called Valhalla Rising. Do you know that one?
Oh God, that is so grim.
Yes.
It's so... Okay, you go ahead.
No, I think, you know, I'm not like the biggest Heilung fan, but I remember I listened to the first album like around the time it came out, and it was not like a huge thing when it came out, at least not to the not at all to the degree that it is now, but I remember that like it sort of got quite a bit of more attention when there was this like YouTube video that had like quite a lot of plays where someone had taken their, I mean, I guess it must have been like the Kriegsgalde or you know, that one, and like put it under, you know, a collection of like fighting or battle scenes from the Viking series, Vikings. And but actually, I think Heilung sounds way more like Valhalla Rising, which is a movie also like with just like King Arthur. It is with Mads Mikkelsen as the main character, as a one-eyed wanderer and fighter, you know, if that's telling you something. And he's like, he plays like this fighting slave, and then they I don't know, it's a weird story, and it's a very, if you are not of 18 years of age or something like that, you should not watch that movie, because it's very grim, it's very brutal, and it sort of follows one eye and a little boy, and they travel together, and then they meet this group of Christian missionaries who want to go to the new world to I forget where they want to go, but they want to go somewhere with a ship, but then they end up in North America somewhere. Well, I don't know. It's a very trippy movie. It has like, it's the story doesn't even matter too much, but it's very heavy with atmosphere, and it's very like psychedelic, even maybe a bit, and it definitely feels very very archaic and very dark and grim, and it feels like, you know, that has a very mythic feeling to me, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. There's a lot of the things that the characters do feel very impactful, even though not because they feel like they have a lot of symbolic meaning. And I remember it being very confused by it, but also being very, very enthralled by it. Like some of the images and the sounds lingered with me for days after watching that movie. And I haven't watched it. I think I've only ever watched it twice, because it is quite taxing, you know, to say the least. And
yes.
If you're in the right mind for it and you can find it somewhere, it's definitely worth the watch. I think it wasn't very well received when it was released. It's very, very impactful. Let's just keep it at that.
I would say don't watch this one with the family.
No, certainly.
Go back to Brave Moana if you want to involve your children.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, sometimes with violence or with fighting in movies, it can be quite the exciting, entertaining thing. Like, for example, like in the aforementioned King Arthur, the fighting is very like heroic and glorious, and there's like, it looks cool, the characters like twirl around their weapons, and it's like, oh yeah, that looks awesome. But the violence in Valhalla Rising is very like grim and brutal, and like shows like the pointlessness and like the nihilism of violence, of physical violence, and that's very it's not, don't watch it like sitting around with your buddies drinking a beer or something like that. That's not, you'll have
or
a bad time.
Date.
Yeah, or a first date. It's not a good first date movie.
Speaking of movies that are also not a very good first date movie, because Antonio Banderas is in it, and let's be honest, everybody, a man or woman, is just going to look at him. Is another sort of weird movie that you're watching, like, okay, should I continue? What did I just watch? I think I sort of liked it. I wasn't actually going to say this, but I was, before I go back to my fairy world movies, I wanted to get this one in there. Probably some people that have watched it will get some nostalgia trip, and other people might find this weird little gem very nice to watch. It's, of course, The 13th Warrior, where a man from the Arabies, I think, is sent by a sultan on a diplomatic mission he ends up at a Viking village to sort of take a break, restock. And he sort of gets embroiled in this sort of quest where this village is being attacked by mysterious creatures. And they are sort of making last stands at the village, and what's happening, there's a fire snake, and there's no bodies, but there, it feels very Beowulf-y at some points. Like you're fighting against something that you don't understand, you can hardly see, and you're outnumbered. So it's very interesting, this movie, to also feel the grimness of, dying and fighting. But I think it also paints a good picture of how grim those older times were. Because if you look at some other medieval movies, and there's a longing from people like, oh, I want to go back to medieval times, and oh, it was so great back then. So this also feels very grim. And I don't know. Yeah, it's actually a weird movie. But I think it fits with the more grim pagan theme in the Heilung Wardruna area.
Totally. I mean, I just gotta say, I freaking love that movie. At every point of time, I have the soundtrack of that movie on my phone, always ready to listen. I was like deciding if I would name King Arthur or the 13th Warrior, because yeah. And I think like the last thing you said is pretty significant, because I think for a lot of pagan folk fans, for the pagan folk scene, it's not about like an authentic recreation of anything. So it only makes sense that you are influenced by things that are also not an authentic recreation of, you know, of something particular. You know, it's like, it's a fairy tale. It's like a myth. You know, it is, I guess you can sort of like, I think the movie is like made after a book. I think it's actually a book by Michael Crichton, I think, now that I think about it. You know, the guy who also wrote Jurassic Park.
You are correct.
Yeah. And I think his book is written after an actual historic account of an Arab trader or something who
Yes.
Yeah, right. So it is, you know, I guess it is at least like the framework is somewhat authentic, but then everything that happens is, I mean, just looking at the costumes of the Vikings and everything, it's hilarious. But
yeah,
but I remember
it's interesting though what you say, like it is sort of by a historical account ish but if you also look at like how Roman generals would describe the tribes here in Northwest Europe, they would write the craziest stuff, but in their eyes, and especially to people that couldn't imagine anything like this, it must have felt and looked, or they must have imagined it like as bizarre as this 13th Warrior movie is.
Yeah, I guess I remember that's like one. I'm not like huge on horror movies, and you know, just it's just not like something that I tend to watch. But I remember, like, the 13th Warrior for the longest time. That film sort of gave me the heebie-jeebies, as you say, because of the, you know, let's just say it, that the novel that the movie's made after is called Eaters of the Dead. You know, that can give you sort of an idea of what sort of part of the story is about. I remember like that was so creepy, and I love that movie so much. It's so good. But I think it's probably
good.
It's I guess it's a very pagan folk movie. Interesting.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to people listening to this. Oh yeah, man. Oh my god, I watched that at some point. I really gotta rewatch that. Some of these movies that we're discussing is a big nostalgia trip for me.
Oh,
already.
Yeah.
I'm already excited to rewatch.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, yeah, I don't know, back then, or back then, but like in my teens, especially my early teens, those movies were like the only types of movies that I would really want to watch. Because, you know, like with, and there was fighting and there was like heroic characters and, you know, maybe they had all, they also had a dark side, but then they had to fight through that. And it was, I really like, you know, I, something that I really like in movies is like the sort of like that, that air of like destiny where, you know, they just, they have to do that. And it's, I don't know, that was, it's just, That didn't really go anywhere. I was just remembering all, you know, movies like Kingdom of Heavens and all, you know, all that. Oh, that, yeah. That's not a very pagan folk movie, though, because, you know, it's about the Crusades.
Well, maybe in their eyes, yeah, they were fighting heretics and stuff in their eyes. I don't know. There's nice music. Yeah, true. So that's,
and it's like a super long movie.
Yeah. Yes. And if you do watch it, watch the extended
yes.
one. Okay, so yeah. I guess we have to dub this podcast to Movies and Moonlight, Pagan Folk Podcast, because I can go on for hours. Okay, so let's both... Oh, fuck. I was going to say, let's both do one more, but then I was like, no, I can't choose. Okay, but I have to just mention them. I'm going back to my fairy thing. Otherwise, I think Nicholas and me will start dressing up and go beat around our furniture because of our heroic flashbacks.
Yes.
So I'm taking you guys back to giving you two titles because they're sort of in the same line is The Dark Crystal. Which now also has a series, by the way. And The Labyrinth. They are both a very fairy-themed... fairy-themed is an understatement. Movies with dolls, puppets, done by the Froud, Mr. Froud. And I think his wife as well. She's puppet master as well. And now, huzzah, Toby Froud is taking over family businesses. But I remember watching The Labyrinth, where a baby gets abducted by the Goblin King, played by David Bowie. God rest his soul. And I was... I didn't know what to think. Because those goblins were very nasty. The castle of the Goblin King was all over the place and had these weird who's the artist that does these stair pictures and they don't
MC Escher
up and it, yes, that Escher-esque like things, and my child like mind couldn't comprehend, and I think that is a perfect job of portraying a fairy / goblin realm that when you look at it, you're like, okay, this is not human. I have to stop trying to understand this world by my concepts of form that I learned as a human. So, and they're just very, very impressive movies, very outdated. Some people are really struggling with that. I know that the Dark Crystal series aired on Netflix and people were also having trouble with it being puppets, and I can understand that. But if you don't want to watch it, then at least listen to the soundtracks of the Dark Crystal series. There are some beautiful, folky, ritualistic fairy gems in there. Really, really worth a watch.
Yeah, I only watched these movies quite recently. I you know, to me they had like, I watched them because I know that they're quite, you know, influential and well beloved. And I think they were enjoyable. You know, of course they were a bit clunky, I guess, but they were very, you know, you can really tell that they were made with a lot of care and that they were just very, you know, very charming in their own way. So I would also definitely recommend watching them if you get the chance. And it's very, you know, they're very easy to watch, I'd say. you know, even though they're a bit old school, they don't give you a hard time. They're very easily accessible, so go for it. My last movie that I want to recommend is also a classic that's a bit older. There is a remake of it, but I wouldn't recommend that. I mean, if you want to get some of the peak performances of our good friend Nicolas Cage, you can watch the remake, but I would recommend the original, and that is, of course, The Wicker Man, which is a movie that is famous for giving away the big twist in its title. But it's a British movie, and it's very, you know, it's about a police officer sort of trying to find a lost child, or like, my English is failing me, but like looking for a lost child on an island, and that island, that British island, is sort of like a colony of like of pagans. And it's a very, and even though like I guess sort of the pagans are supposed to be like the bad guys in the movie, it's very, you know, they just live their life in the way that they think is right. And you know, I guess apart from the murdering, but you know, it's a good movie. It has a very like psychedelic atmosphere, and the soundtrack is like a cool psychedelic folk sort of a little bit progressive music by, I think it was like made by a band that played the soundtrack. But yeah, it's more of a modern approach to like what a pagan community could look like, but it's with Christopher Lee also, so there's lots of reasons to watch it. Have you watched that one?
I think I made the horrible mistake of watching the Nicolas Cage one, and I was like, yes, no, thank you.
I mean, Nicolas Cage, that's, I want to do, no, I guess we can't do an episode about Nicolas Cage, right?
No, probably not. Me and Nicolas Cage, nope.
All right. That's my last recommendation. But of course, these were only some of the pagan folk movies that are, or like movies that we would consider sort of pagan folk. If you have any suggestions, please write them to us, and we're gonna share them on our social media, because I'm very intrigued to see what we missed out on, or maybe even discover some movies, you know, that we haven't, that we don't know at all. So I'm excited to see what you can think of. And this has been, we've been throwing a whole lot of names and movies at you, and we're not gonna stop, because we are gonna also recommend you some music for you to
Hell
listen
yes.
to on our playlist, Meet at Moonlight, the playlist. Find it on Spotify.
I listened to it last night when I had the first seat rehearsal again, and it's actually really good. It's actually very good.
I remember that Nina told me, like, Nicolas, maybe like take out the 20-minute weird Tibetan throat singing song off it, because that's quite, it kills the mood a bit. So I don't know.
I can see that being skipped on, like, if you're just hanging around with your folk friends, and you have like a nice like mood, and sometimes like the ooh, this is a pretty song, and then yeah, I think that I can see where she's coming from. But then again, it could also be good that people discover it and have a cool trance trip. I don't know if we should censor it.
We'll keep it on there for now, and then if enough people complain, we'll reconsider. All right. I'm just going to be so bold and start with my first pick. I'm just taking it. So my two songs this week, you know, the area where I live here in sort of like the middle of Germany has been struck with sort of a cold, like a wave of cold weather, cold and rainy weather for the past couple days, which makes it kind of gloomy, which I am not opposed to. I kind of like a little bit of gloomy weather and atmosphere once in a while. So my song picks this week sort of reflect on that, and I've been delving a little bit into my musical history, and I'm going to put some dark acoustic sort of like folk on there. The first track being of the Norwegian black metal band, Ulva, but they made a very famous acoustic EP. I think it's not really long enough to be called an album, but that EP is called Kveldsanger, and the song that I'm putting on there is called Kveldsang, and it's very, you know, it's for like the nightly walk in the forest, or maybe, you know, especially for autumn and winter, it's very melancholic and rural and foresty. Yeah, check it out.
Nice. Okay. I'm taking you guys to something completely different. Now for something completely different.
A man with a tape recorder in his mouth.
A weird Scottish folk band after Norwegian black metal. I actually asked my bandmates for help because, I mean, this is the 12th episode, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so we've already, as we're not double dipping into bands, it's starting to get more tricky and tricky to come up with worthwhile things that we sort of feel fits and is something that we have sort of a connection with. But so this is one that I started listening to very recently, since last night. But it's actually really, really interesting. And in the words, I'm just going to read how they profile themselves. It is even a multi-award-winning act and one of Scotland's most sought-after folk bands, with three heralded albums. La 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 la. Their exquisitely rugged yet refined blend of fiddle, highland pipes, flute, ballroom, and guitar has won a devoted following. La ha 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 ha. So I skimmed through their songs, and I was actually very impressed by one of their songs, especially. This is a more down-tempo of the band Rura, R-U-R-A, and it's Horizons Part 1, from their album In Praise of Home, which Scottish people like to do with their exile songs, I guess. So go check it out. It's a very
cool,
refreshing band.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna listen to that. So for my second pick, I'm gonna go for a band that is very near and dear to my heart. They've been one of my like earliest, you know, quote unquote favorite bands that I got really into when I was in my teenage years, and their lyrics and their music have impacted me greatly even to this day, to some degree, I'd say. And I listen to them a whole lot these days, even though like a couple of weeks back I had a stint where I listened to their whole discography because, yeah, I sort of was in that mood. And that band is the Austrian band Dornenreich, which is a German word, which is interesting because it can be translated two ways. It can either mean full of thorns or realm of thorns, and I always thought that that was so cool. And, you know, they're also, you know, usually in the dark or black metal realm, but they've also done an acoustic album, which is called In Luft Geritzt. And they have a song on there. It's just acoustic guitar, violin, and then not really singing, but more like whispering of like the lyrics. It has very few lyrics. And that song is called Dem Wind Geboren, which means, which translates to like born to the wind, and it has a very wistful and sort of airy, melancholic, but also longing atmosphere. And it's sort of like drifting away with the wind when you listen to it. And that's my second pick.
Nice, thank you so much. Very interesting additions, I'd say. And I'm going to go with a very well-known artist, actually, that has especially blown up with his song, Follow the sun, rising in the wind blows, this is gone. It's, of course, Xavier Rudd. That is a guy who plays crazy didgeridoo, has a very nice voice, and has some amazing songs out there. And I've chosen to add the song Spirit Bird to the playlist, which sings of ancestral wise people, ancestral spirits sort of fading because of people being driven by their greed to sort of take from the land. And it's a very empowering song as well to sort of awaken you to look around you and fight for all that is dear and pure.
Well, it sounds...
Keep fighting for your children now. Keep fighting for your land, which I think is very applicable to today. Today's world.
Yeah, I mean, I guess fight for your land is, you know...
No, not for your country, but fight for the nature land.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. And I think, like, a lot of what he does, like, sort of pertains to, like, sort of, like, the native populations of a lot of places, right? I think he's sort of involved with that a lot. Sorry to just come in there.
No.
Okay. Yeah. So these are our two picks each to the ever-growing playlist. I mean, eventually we're gonna have to double dip, I guess, which, you know, at least sometimes, because there's only so much pagan folk or folk-adjacent music out there. But, you know, for now, I actually think it's quite an exciting challenge to not do that and to, like, find new stuff every week. So we're going to try to keep that up for a bit longer. And with that, that is the end of this episode. Sort of like, you can write us if you liked this sort of not too pagan folk music centric episode, but more, you know, us talking about stuff that I guess influenced us in that regard. I think it's you know, it's interesting to see where Kuhn has sort of his influences and where I have mine, and where they surprisingly overlap a lot, apparently. So that's cool. And well, that's really all I gotta say. I mean, maybe next week we can try and reschedule for our first guest. If not, we'll come up with a different exciting topic for you for us to talk about. And Kuhn, do you want to have the last word?
Sure. Yeah. I do propose that we make a big movie recommendation topic on our page, so people can reference to, and we can drop all the movies that we didn't have the time to talk about. And so that could be interesting. That first of all. And as closing words, do I have some wisdoms to share? Let me look at my inspirational wallpaper that I made. Remember this, guys. You cannot get rid of an emotion. You have to feel it and shine a light on it. Yep, that's a very good way to get rid of fear and anxiety. Don't push it away. Feel it and it will dissipate. It has helped me. So I hope it shall also help you. And that's it for this week, guys. That's it. Thank you so much for listening. Love you.